Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. The TV festival circuit landed in Duluth, Minnesota the last few days. Learn what emerged from Catalyst when Executive Director Philip Gilpin joins me next. 5 years ago, LuLaRoe was generating $2 billion in sales through a network of 80,000 independent retailers. How this enterprise busted unfolds in LuLaRich, Amazon's new documentary miniseries. You'll hear executive producers Jenna First and Julia Nathan later this hour. Also ahead, new Netflix projects, new Zego's multicast, our new classic trivia question with three prizes in play, and reset from Friday and up on Black Tag. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker and Tuner Radio, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Amazon Music, Verbal, Reason, and Apple Podcasts. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in our program. A very good Monday afternoon to you and all, and welcome once again to the program all about TV's current and future. 70 unsettled degrees here in the New York metro area, sort of an overcast day with showers on and off. Hopefully drier and a little bit higher in temperatures the rest of the week. Happy to have you with us. We have some good guests coming your way over the next hour and change, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's very simple. All you got to do is pick up the phone and dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or Tuner Radio. And if you're shy about the phone, that is no problem with us. Just use our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. To use the phone or the room, either way, you're interactive with us and our guests. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, tune in screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. We are expecting Philip Gilpin from the Catalyst TV Festival to join us live from Duluth, Minnesota. Hopefully he will after these news notes. We're less than 9 hours away from Netflix releasing its latest interactive presentation in a long while. It's Escape the Undertaker, with the Halloween motif and popular WWE tag team The New Day co-starring. The premise? Guide New Day through the Undertaker's mansion filled with many otherworldly obstacles. In another Netflix development, the company will fund a $6.4 million scholarship at Howard University in Washington, D.C. in memory of Black Panther star Chadwick Boseman. Four fine arts students entering Howard this fall will get scholarships covering all 4 years of their Howard education. As of this morning, Newsy is now a multicast channel and smart TV product, delivered news venture. 17 hours per day of Newsy, owned by Scripps Networks, will play on multicast channels covering 90% of the U.S. Smart TV and device carriage of Newsy will continue. Now some quickies, and this first one is a biggie. Kelly Campbell is no longer Hulu's president. She has been president when she became Hulu's top executive early last year. Before that, she was chief marketing officer. Originally, we were led to believe through an email that was sent to Hulu employees earlier today that there was no word on whether she was fired or whether she left of her own accord. All that Hulu's management would say is everything is hunky-dory. We're going to have a new chief coming soon. In the meantime, we will have various executives report to other Hulu management or Walt Disney management, which is Hulu's parent company. However, in the last half hour, we have learned that Campbell, that's Kelly Campbell, has put out a LinkedIn note saying, basically, that she left of her own accord and she may have a new venture she is dealing with in the works. Only time will tell. So anyway, that is the latest we have on the big news of the day, that Kelly Campbell is no longer Hulu's president. Prior to that announcement earlier this afternoon, Hulu's big news today was greenlining Washington Black, a drama series starring and executive produced by Emmy winner from This Is Us, Sterling K. Brown. And graphic novel American Born Chinese will be turned into an action comedy series at Disney Plus, directed by the director of the big new Marvel film, Shang-Chi. And that is news notes for today. In case you are not aware, there are some parts of the Internet that are not working at this hour, specifically Facebook. We understand that Facebook is down. There are such services as WhatsApp. Instagram is also down. I'm not sure if that may be impacting our ability to get our first guest, Philip Gilpin, from Catalyst, the TV festival based in Duluth, Minnesota. It used to be known as ITVF. used to be based in New England. Then it moved to Duluth, Minnesota a couple of years ago. It was not held last year because of the coronavirus pandemic. It was back mostly as a virtual project. They did, I think, had some in-person events too. So we're waiting Phil to join us. Phil, if you're hearing us, give it a try, 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see that you're ready to go, we will have you on the program. In the meantime, we're going to go forward and do our special classic trivia segment. So unfortunately, nobody got the answer to the question we posed the last 2 weeks, the question being, name the fictional area of Los Angeles where the Shield took place. The answer, Farmington, a.k.a. The Farm. We would have taken either answer. Farmington, a.k.a. The Farm, was the fictional area of Los Angeles where The Shield, FX's first scripted series, Emmy-winning, award-winning all over the place, took place. And so, unfortunately, nobody got our two prizes, the I Love Lucy Nixon Match Magnet set and the Star Special, A Hollywood Christmas, a salute to all those great Christmas movies of bygone Hollywood days, narrated by Jane Seymour. However, let's give you a brand-new question to play with, and we're going to throw in a third prize, a prize, in fact, that will come out in a book form tomorrow. The prize is a new book from the people behind Nailed It. That's the popular Netflix Emmy-nominated competition series hosted by Nicole Byer. The book is called Nailed It, Baking Challenges for the Rest of Us. That's Baking Challenges for the Rest of Us. The book comes out tomorrow, but right now you have a chance to win that along with our other prizes if you know the answer to this question. Name the 1960s TV lawyer drama starring Carl Betz. Name the 1960s TV lawyer drama starring Carl Betz, that's B-E-T-Z. If the name is familiar, that's the person who played Donna Reed's husband on the long-running sitcom on ABC, The Donna Reed Show. This was his first major role after his time with The Donna Reed Show, and in fact, he won an Emmy Award for Best Actor in a Drama Series for it. One more time, here's the question. Name the TV lawyer drama starring Carl Betz. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please be sure to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win all three prizes. That's the I Love Lucy Nixon Match Magnet Set featuring Lucy herself, Lucille Ball, the Stars Special with Jane Seymour, A Hollywood Christmas, and now the Nailed It book that's Nailed It, Baking Challenges for the Rest of Us. That comes out all over the country tomorrow. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, as always, we will post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook, which hopefully we'll have it back together and be back in business by tomorrow morning, as well as on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. And as always, if you want to play in, do so, because that's the way you get your opportunity to win. So get in the game today. And all the very best. If we have time at the end of the program, we'll repeat the question in case you just tuned in late. Again, we are still awaiting Philip Gilpin, the executive director of Catalyst, one of the top TV festivals in the U.S. of A., formerly known as ITVF, was originally based in New England. Last couple of years, it's been Duluth, Minnesota. Many people in the business call it the Sundance Festival for TV series pilots. And it's one of the few TV festivals that has participation from the National Academy of TV Arts and Sciences, the people that give out the annual Sports Emmy Awards, Daytime Emmy Awards, and News and Doc Emmy Awards that they did a week or so ago. We are waiting Phil to come on the program. Phil, if you're hearing us, give us the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And we hope at the bottom of the hour to have the two documentary executive producers of the new Amazon miniseries, Lulu Rich. It's a very unique story about a business that was riding high just 5 years ago, and it just busted through a number of different crazy things happening to it. So we hope to have the executive producers, their award winners, Jennifer and Julian Nathan, we hope to have them around the bottom of the hour. So while we wait for Philip to come aboard, or we wait for Jenner and Julia to join us, let's give you up as an update. We promised you we would do this on Friday's episode, and because of the way our episode went, especially with those two wonderful people from the Law & Order Special Victims Unit podcast, that's messed up. We ran out of time, so let's do it now. It's up as an update. It's our regular segment where we catch up on guests and topics on this program. And last December on this program, we introduced you to a very unusual programming service that was out to get off the ground the first 3 months of this year. It's called Black Tag, and its creators, call it a mix between Netflix and YouTube. And the way it works is this. It's basically a service involving new content produced by creators of color, specifically African Americans. And it would be a mix of content that would be Netflix-like, Amazon-like, Hulu-like, that kind of production value, and they call the business premium, that would be on a particular tier. Also, they would run user-generated content by up-and-coming African-American creators and other creators of color on a separate tier. Both tiers would be advertise-supported. And as mentioned, when our guests, who were the two co-founders of the venture, and that's Akeem and Osmer, were on the program, they said that they would launch the service on smart TV sets and smart devices during the first 3 months, 21. Well, last Thursday, as part of the Urban World Innovation Conference that took place at WarnerMedia's new headquarters at Hudson Yards in Midtown Manhattan, the folks from Black Tag came in public. We believe it was their first public appearance ever. And they had a lot to say, and we were the only press person that was able to get information about what they said. So what you're about to hear is exclusive information. It's not been reported anywhere else about what is going on now with Black Tag. First, Black Tag is up and running. However, not on smart TV sets or smart devices yet. If you have an Apple iPhone or you have a smartphone that uses Android as its operating system or iOS as its operating system, you can get Black Tag right now by downloading their app. And they're already running content. Some of it is Netflix-like. Some of it is YouTube-like. And it is currently running. Now, talking to the Black Flag executives afterward, they told me that smart TV sets and smart TV devices are still on the agenda and that their new goal is to have smart TV distribution of their service within the first 3 months of next year, 2022. And they're already in conversation with various smart TV set makers and device makers to make that happen. Now, the thing with Black Tag is that they've also expanded what they want to do. First of all, one thing that they didn't talk about with us in December, but they are talking about it now, and they did on Thursday at the Urban World Innovation Conference, which was very well put together, part of the Urban World Film Festival that wrapped up this past weekend here in New York, is they want to do a mix of scripted, unscripted content, both user-generated and premium, plus a mix of live streaming events, some created, by the way, by the Black Tag people, interactive features, as well as commerce. In other words, they would be doing programming where you'd be able to manipulate the shows in some fashion and or buy product that is featured on the programming. And they want to do a lot of shows in the unscripted vein, particularly in fashion, food, culture, education, as well as scripted entertainment. And some of the shows that are currently running or will be about to run on Black Tag in its smartphone iteration is one called Superimposed that would be music performances from a wide variety of genres, an astrology show called What's Your Sign, and ASS, which stands for African Sex Stories. It's a video podcast that is going on that is quite interesting. All right, we'll have more about Black Tag shortly, but right now let's see who is on and with us. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. Who are you and where are you calling from? Hello, you're on the air. Let's see if this is Philip Gilpin from Catalyst or one of the folks from Amazon's miniseries, Lula Rich. All right, we're trying to get them on. We're having a little technical issue. Bear with us. Let's see if we can get them. Again, bear with me. We're having a little bit of a technical issue. I don't know if this is related, again, to all the issues that Facebook is having as we speak. And we understand that Facebook, by the way, is working on the problem with all of their apps, including Instagram and WhatsApp, and they do hope to have it rectified in the next couple of hours. The people on the persons on the line, hold on. We are trying to get this situation cleared up. So if you're having an issue, call us back, 646-652-2906. It's 646-652-2906. And as soon as I see that you are back and running, we will put you on. That's 646-652-2906. In the meantime, and I will be getting back to Black Tag, our up segment, shortly, I want to let you know that coming up Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, among our guests, we'll have one of the key people at Respectability, Lauren Applebaum, no relation. That's the organization that is dealing with having people with disabilities have more opportunities in television, both in front and behind the camera. Okay, let's see if we have our guest on. Hello, it's Simon Applebaum from Tomorrow Be Televised. Who is on the line?
Hello, how are you? This is Jenner First, the co-director of Lula Rich for Amazon Prime Video.
Jenner, great to have you with us. Thank you for coming aboard. Is Julia with you as well?
No, she's actually on another project right now. Then we're multitasking, so I thought I would tune in and say hello.
Well, thank you very much. So let's get right into our conversation. And again, for those of you tuning in, you have a question or comment about Jenner's project, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04. And again, we will pick up the up segment on Black Tag a little bit later on in our hour. Jenner, this series that you've done, it is quite remarkable in the fact that here you have this company just 5 years ago, seemed to be on top of the world, and now it's a bust. How did you and your colleague get involved in putting this docuseries together?
Well, first of all, thanks for having us. I know your listeners are, you know, accustomed to hearing the real deal on television. And, you know, in this particular project, we were, you know, very fortunate to have collaborators from Storyforce, Blythe Faust and Corey Stern, who brought us this concept based on all the media coverage and just, you know, their, you know, conversation to us was, you know, we believe there's a lot more meat on the bone. And, you know, at Cinemark, we had done a lot of events like this. We had done Fire Fraud, you know, and we had done some other very large events that involved, you know, intricately threading the needle. And so we took it back to our showrunner, Mike Gasparo, and our lead creative producer, Lana Barkin. And it was just instant that we thought this would be a great project for us all to do. And literally, in about 2 months, we had already pitched it. And we had already, you know, landed the founders in the interview. So it moved so quickly. And about 15 months ago, we had that conversation. And, you know, and a month ago, it was released. So the timeline was exceptional, and the wind was at our back. So we were very lucky.
You mentioned your documentary about the Fyre Festival, which, like this enterprise, Lula Rowe, was a situation where, again, it looked like everything was ready to go with this, and then it just busted up. Does that seem to be like your stock in trade for you and Julia to do these documentaries about enterprises that just seem to, out of nowhere, you know, tumble down like dominoes?
You know, it's interesting you ask. You know, we have a couple lanes, and I think that the true comedy space, you know, the sort of wacky, stranger than fiction, corporate tale, and social media deception, and you know, that's prevalent, and we have a lot in development, and obviously Fire Fraud and Lula Rich, and we have another lane around social justice, our work around Khalif Browder and Trayvon Martin, and we have another lane around true justice, you know, our work in Welcome to Leith, which was from 2015, and also The Pharmacist. And so we have these different buckets that we tell stories in, but the one unifying quality of all of them is that, you know, we're truly humanists. We believe in our characters, and we believe that the humanity of these people and their stories and the characters in these films transcend, you know, the issues, and we're able to actually see the zeitgeist through these characters and these huge premium events that reach hundreds of millions of people. And that's the type of premium entertainment that we're after, and it doesn't necessarily matter what the story is, as long as we can have that type of conversation with viewers.
Yeah. What about this situation got your head going? Like, we got to cover this. This thing is so incredible, both how this company came to be, and how this company just, like a volcano, just burst wide open and just, you know, folded up like a ton of bricks, that it was worth doing,
yeah,
not just a documentary special, but a whole miniseries about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you could have done 10 parts on LuLaRoe, you know, from the family to the origin story to the clothing to the all the different aspects that, you know, the LDS connection, all these different things made it very ripe. But I think for us, we saw an opportunity to tell a story that was engaging and entertaining and funny and wacky and strange, but that would ultimately ask some big questions about our economy, that would ask some big questions about the validity of multi-level marketing and why we still allow it to occur, and that would ultimately expose sort of a misogynistic, patriarchal power structure and the way in which, you know, in this particular case, the empowerment of women was used as a pitch when the company, in the end, was doing anything but that. And so all of those factors to us spelled out what could be an incredible event, and I think we were right. I mean, the world has responded, and it's still, in many ways, you know, really interested in watching this story, and Amazon's response on the platform has been staggering.
What has been the response from viewers who've seen this through Amazon, and have you gotten any response? I know this will be a question I should ask later, but I'll ask it now. Why not? What has been the response from the subjects that you and your team interviewed?
You know, I think starting with Amazon, they've had just an explosive response on their platform, so much so that I think this really proved a long-term strategy of investing in a lot more documentaries. So we're grateful for that on a lot of different reasons, not just for ourselves, but for our peers, that we think that the success of Lularich has now opened the door and Amazon is going to be fully in business, hopefully buying other documentary events like ours from other creators who are our peers. So that's very exciting. And then when it comes to the subjects, I think all the subjects who wanted justice are extremely thrilled with what has gone on recently and the attention. And I think that you can go down in a spectrum from there. And folks who had a kind of complicated story have complicated feelings. And then, of course, the founders, you know, we're calling it, you know, it totally missed the mark and it missed the truth of LuLaRoe and blah, 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 blah. But I think, you know, cream rises to the top and the truth always prevails. And in this case, one could look at their motivations and look at, you know, their ultimate position here with a business still operational and, you know, multiple lawsuits still open. And you can take what they say with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Jenner First. He is one of the key executive producers of Lularich. That is the new documentary miniseries running on Amazon, available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And Jen joins us live here this aft hour. And actually, we're going to bring him into the second half hour of our program on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom, I've been with you live from New York, where it is 70 degrees at the top of the hour. Very unsettled day here in the New York metro area. If you have a question or a comment for our guests, make the phone ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And just to let you know, we will have the fine folks at Audible.com, our sponsor, will get a message from them in during the beginning of our second half hour. So it'll be after the bottom of the hour, just to let you know, so we give Jenna more time to have our conversation going. And incidentally, let me see, by the way, if Philip Gilpin from Catalyst may have just joined us. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. Who's on the line?
Hey, guys. It's Philip from Catalyst. How are you?
Philip, fine, thank you. I'll tell you what we'll do, because we currently have our other guests on the line. We're going to put you on during our second half hour, if that's okay.
You got it. You let me know when. I'll be there.
All right. I'll tell you what. We will put you on at quarter of the hour. You're on Central Time from Duluth, Minnesota. That makes it 2:45 your time, so we'll put you on then.
You got it. I'll call you back.
All right, Philip, you got it. That's Philip Giplin from Catalyst, the TV festival that took place over the weekend in Duluth, Minnesota. We will have him on at quarter to the hour, so stay tuned for that. So for those people who don't know, Jenner, about this company, LuLaRoe, how did they come about? And how did they get to be what they were at their zenith?
You know, LuLaRoe is no different than any other multi-level marketing company, you know, in that in many ways they pitch an opportunity. And it doesn't matter really what the product is. And I think for many years in LuLaRoe's, you know, growth cycle in the beginning, you know, it was about the product, buttery soft leggings, and it was about a made in America claim and the quality of this fabric and the quality of the clothing and the quality of the style, when in actuality, you know, the styles were, you know, I think bashed by a lot of fashion insiders, and it really didn't have to do with the clothing. It had to do with the opportunity. And that's what multi-level marketing thrives on, selling an opportunity. And ultimately, if you get in early, it is a great opportunity because you're able to create a very robust downline. You bring on people, they bring on people, those people bring on people, and commissions flow upward to you. But by the time you get a couple tiers down the line, the person who's out there trying to find people doesn't have as big of a pool. The pool is winnowed. And in addition, a key component to these MLMs is that you have to sell product, and all of a sudden your market to selling the product's a lot smaller because there's so many other people out there. And so this endless chain concept that our expert, Robert Fitzpatrick, talks about is very much true here with all MLMs, and that you eventually run out of people. You get to about the 13th tier of an MLM, and there isn't enough people on the planet to sustain it. But again, for those who got in early, it's a great opportunity. So you have certain people chasing these MLM opportunities their whole careers. They're career MLMers. And they try to get in early, and they try to get in, you know, close to early, and they try to just jump on these opportunities. In many ways, Mark and Deanne were like that. They had worked at multiple MLMs, just not as founders and not at the top. But here they were with an idea that put them right at the top. And the promise that Deanne had to the women in the very beginning did come true. Those women made tons of money. But when you go down that line, you get to the middle of it, and you get to the sort of later stages, people are struggling to break even, and most people at the bottom are losing money. And so I think that's the kind of question that we ask with this program is, if that's what it takes for multi-level marketing to keep being operational, is that the type of business that we all want to put, you know, our passion behind, or that we all feel is just and moral in today's economy?
At the same time, though, Jenner, you don't get 80,000 people from all different backgrounds across the country to independently be retailers of LuLaRoe's product without a compelling pitch. What was the pitch this company was making to these independent retailers, mostly women, that said to them, hey, we got something here for you to, you know, to fulfill your American dream, and here it is, be part of it.
Well, I mean, you could ask the same question about why nearly 80,000 people bought tickets to an event that didn't exist in the Bahamas because of an orange square on Instagram. I mean, these are head scratchers. We ask ourselves all the time, how does it happen? But I think when you look behind the surface level, that you see there's a lot of reasons why it's happening. And I think that the pitch was too good to be true, but people want to believe in something too good to be true because there aren't as many opportunities as there was before. You know, we're a generation, specifically millennials and Gen Z and Gen Xers as well, who have less opportunities than their parents, who are in many cases more educated and yet struggling economically and facing sort of an existential crisis in which many industries don't exist the way they did before. You know, and if you are building a family, you know, as a woman, the idea that, you know, the sort of feminist ideals that this pop feminism, that you can be a girl boss and you can have it all and, you know, all this stuff that many women argue is not real, you know, that was their pitch. And so you have the confluence of multiple factors, the fact that that pitch felt good for many of these women who were at home raising children and who wanted viability, wanted to convert all of these corporate skills that they may have learned in their jobs prior to being to starting a family, or they, you know, they may just be facing economic hardship where just simply the pitch of some money is enough to get them signed up. And then, of course, there's the idea of community and social media and being influential and having followers and the sort of seduction of all that, but also the base level human desire to be seen, to be part of something, you know, to belong. And so you take that, you put social media in the mix, and the whole thing is like, you know, it's like Miracle-Gro, and it's like a Frankenstein where a typical MLM now all of a sudden has this, you know, a face of a women's empowerment movement, and it has, you know, the explosive quality of social media to boost recruits. Because you got to remember, MLMs used to be door-to-door. You had the choice whether to let the vacuum salesman come in or the person selling Tupperware or Amway or the person, the Avon lady, recently we did a piece and they did the clip from Edward Scissorhands, you know, where she shows up, the Avon lady shows up. You know, this is not the same now with social media. You know, people can look a different way. They can tap right into your followers and your stream, and all of a sudden they're appearing to be part of your life with an opportunity too good to be true, and it is too good to be true. And so I think that, you know, you look at all those factors, that's how this thing was a runaway train. That's why it was, quote, unquote, catastrophic growth.
Coming up in our next half hour, more from Jenner First, one of the executive producers of Lulurich, now running as a documentary series and acclaimed one, too, on Amazon. Then, quarter of the hour, we will be joined from Duluth, Minnesota, by Philip Gilpin, the executive director of Catalyst, the latest TV festival to grace these United States. And coming up after the top of the hour, we will finish up that up segment about Black Tag with more exclusive information you will only get here on this program. All that coming way after pause, after the bottom of the hour, for web identification. Protect the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together reach over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out Real Food with Chef Bao, Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, here exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, best to be charged 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this Monday afternoon edition of Suave Televised, the program all about TV's current and future. Simon Avon with you live from New York. Once again, we're joined by executive producer and award winner Jen First from Lulurich, the new Amazon documentary miniseries now playing on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Jenna, when you and your colleague Julia Nason were investigating this whole situation, what was the big curveball that as you were interviewing all the people involved on all sides of the situation, what was the big curveball for you?
You know, I think in any one of these stories, you have to move quickly, you know, and for Julia and I, you know, and our partner Mike and Lana, and of course our partners at Storyforce, Bly Faust and Corey Stern, you know, we had to navigate a very complicated playing field in which you had a company that was still in business. You had an open civil case with the state of Washington in which the attorney general was overseeing a case alleging that LuLaRoe was a pyramid scheme. You had several different open lawsuits, class actions that were trying to be filed and officiated as class actions. You had, you know, a lot of different disgruntled people, and then you had a lot of people that were still part of the organization whom we felt whose opinion was valuable. You know, if you're still there, tell us why. And so to navigate all that was a giant curveball. And it wasn't one that we were unfamiliar with. You know, we've walked this walk before. You know, a lot of the films and series that we make at the Cinemart are like live cultures. You know, they're like a petri dish with some kind of, you know, crazy spawning, you know, bacteria in it. It grows. It is viral in the real sense of the word. And, you know, you gotta be very careful when you're producing this thing on the inside not to catch the virus yourself. So it takes a deft hand. And it took a lot of organization, but really in many ways the whole thing was a curveball. And the fact that we were able to get it out to viewers within a year and navigate, you know, massive access with the state of Washington in which our FOIA request was granted and we were able to receive the depositions and a bunch of official paperwork is a testament to the machine we've created now for several years making these premium events.
Mm-hmm. How willing was LuLaRoe's management willing to talk to you and your fellow producers?
I think for Julia and I, and you know, and our partner Mike, and you know, and those who work directly with Mark and Deanne's team, you know, our pitch was always very simple from day one. Look, we're making this story one way or the other. And you're either going to be in it, you know, vocalizing your story and telling us, you know who you are and why you believe the things you believe and what your company is about, or someone else is going to be in it doing that for you. And you're still in business, so it must be because you believe you're doing something worthy and righteous. So if that's the case, then you should have nothing to hide. And I think that resonated. And I also think that there was a degree of sort of gamesmanship on their part to hopefully be able to have some control of the narrative, which, you know, as journalists and storytellers, you know, that's not really an option for us with anybody. But, you know, I think that in this case, ego, there was a little narcissism there. But ultimately, there's a human condition to want to tell your own story. And we really do not discriminate in that regard. And we think that anyone, no matter what kind of story they've been involved in, no matter what the allegation is entitled to tell their own story at this stage. If it's become a global event that everybody's talking about, it's become an internet meme and a dumpster fire, I think most of the time we kind of look over the details. And it's those subtleties that we care about. And so we care about all of our subjects. Regardless of what Mark and Deanne may have done or may not have done, we give them the same humanity we give anyone else in the film. And I think that that's a testament to why we're able to do what we do and get access with high-profile people, because we walk the walk. We don't just talk the talk. We walk the walk.
Now, is this company still in business, albeit not at the heights they were 5 years ago?
Yeah, they're still in business, and I think you could look at their model now, and it's very telling. And you could look at the playing field now, and it's even more urgent that we have a serious conversation about these types of business. So LuLaRoe is still operational. They settled the Washington State case for $4.75 million, which essentially was like a speeding ticket. So they had almost $2 billion in growth over 3 or 4 years. And they have a $4.75 million settlement with one state. So that's to which you could look at the consequence in our system for essentially breaking the law and not honoring the quote-unquote Amway rules, which are the things that Amway helped institute when they were on trial decades ago, and that is now the roadmap for a legal MLM. They were not honoring those Amway rules for years. And in return, they have one speeding ticket from one state. And right now, you could look at their onboarding fees, and their onboarding fees are right under $500. The average onboarding fee used to be around $5,000, and now it's right around $500. And you can look at they're not publicizing the amount of members they have, but it's a far cry from 80,000. They had a major dip in membership after the scandal started coming out and after their product was suffering. So if you put all of that together, what it tells me is that they're trying to make it easier to become a member of LuLaRoe, and that despite everything that happened, now that they're going the speed limit, everything's okay. But the reality is, during that period of catastrophic growth, Washington State was not the only place in which consumers and buyers and retailers got hurt by this company. And so what hopefully happens is that other attorneys generals see Washington's case and say, you know what, here in California, we think you should pay a speeding ticket too. And you know what, here in North Carolina, we think you should pay one here too. And in New Jersey, I think we're going to send you guys a similar case. And that may help create a more equitable justice for the people who got hurt. But in the end, the big thing, Simon, is it has nothing to do with simply LuLaRoe. This is a systemic issue. Multi-level marketing is completely legal in this country. It affects a lot of people. It affects a lot of people, from the LDS church. Everybody's latching on to, their Mormon faith. And the reality is people who are of an LDS background get preyed upon the most from MLMs. I mean, Utah has its own division for this type of crime. And so I feel like there's a bigger conversation to be had here. And that's hopefully what the takeaway is on the legislative level. We know on the viewership level, people love it and ultimately want to make sure that Daryl Trujillo can listen to Kelly Clarkson again, and all the memeable stuff that's in the show is getting great attention. But from the legislative angle, I think there's a bigger conversation to be had about what's legal about multi-level marketing, why, and are we going to continue this charade much longer?
Mm-hmm. And you also have to wonder whether there's a lesson too of independent entrepreneur beware of a business you may be getting into. We will certainly
100%
see. 100%,
Simon. Yeah.
We have a question or comment in our remaining minutes with executive producer Jenna First of the new Amazon documentary miniseries, Lula Rich. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04Banana. And coming up again in about 10 minutes, about 8 minutes from now, we'll be joined from Duluth, Minnesota by Philip Gilpin. He's the executive director of Catalyst, the annual TV festival. The original start is ITVF in New England. Now it's in Duluth, Minnesota. They had their latest edition over this past few days, and he'll be with us live to tell us how it all turned out. Also, we'll have our up segment on Black Tag. which was the subject of this program with the founders of that venture last December, and they've come a long way since then, and we have some very interesting sidelines that we'll hear about in a little bit. That's after the top of the hour. So what have you and Julia moved on to with both separately and with your company?
Well, Julia and I produce everything together. We run the Cinemart. We're coming up on 10 years in business, and we're at a big inflection point. Essentially, from 2015 to today, we've had a big global event every year that's been critically acclaimed or Emmy-nominated or has won a Peabody or, you know, dot, dot, dot. And so for us, we've been, you know, working very hard, putting the sweat equity to create consistency in this company. And we're at a kind of a big turning point in which we've been able to create the framework for a larger studio. And we have, you know, over a dozen projects in development, and we're tacking into the scripted space and multiple projects. We have a deal with David Permit, the Oscar-nominated producer, to adapt The Pharmacist into a scripted feature. And there's amazing talent on board for that that we'll be able to talk more about soon. And similarly, we're working with Storyforce to develop Lula Rich into a scripted project, and you know, we'll have a lot more updates on that as the future pans out. But there's just a ton of interest across the industry to work on that adaptation. So the future is bright for the Cinemart. It's been a decade in business, and you know, we've been hard at work this whole time. So Julia and I are committed to quality projects that, you know, have purpose and that advance the conversation in our zeitgeist. And whether that's scripted or nonfiction, formatted or docuseries, we have a wide slate of premium projects that were out in development and some about to go into production. So it's been an incredibly robust time for us.
Again, the name of the documentary series is Lula Rich. It is now playing on Amazon, which is available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. For more details about the program and the service online, go to Amazon or AmazonStudios.com. That's Amazon or AmazonStudios.com. Lula Rich, now playing through smart TV sets and smart devices on Amazon. Jennifer is one of the executive producers of the program with fellow executive producer Julia Nesson through their production company known as the Cinemark. Thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on how the series is going so far. Look forward to hopefully having both of you back on the show again to talk about new TV projects. And in the meantime, all the very best to both of you.
Thank you very much, Simon. Appreciate the support.
Same here, Jennifer. Take care. Enjoy the week. Jennifer, executive producer of Lula Rich, joining us live here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Coming up shortly, we'll go live to Duluth, Minnesota, and speak with the executive director behind the recent Catalyst Festival, that's Philip Gilpin. He will join us live after these words from the fine folks at Audible.com. You know, Dune, the movie, is out, and it's doing very, very well at the box office and also on smart TV sets and smart devices. I believe it's on HBO Max. Because the Warner Brothers release. But if you have never read the original book by Frank Herbert, you can listen to it right now through a trial run with Audible.com. Remember, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio information, entertainment, and inspiration. There's over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device. Whatever you're hearing us on right now, it's Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, our various podcast affiliates, and our website, tomorrowbetelevised.podsite.io. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook, 1 month trial of service, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and while it lasts, special life-saving health and wellness information. And get this, if you're an Amazon Prime member already, you get two audiobooks for the price of one. That is, one of those books could come from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking about original audio series and podcast productions, the best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, and great woman and one-man performances. Plus, also, whether you're an Amazon Prime member or not, if you sign up after your trial, you will save nearly 50% on your books the first 4 months of your subscription. But you got to get in now, and to do that, go to audibletrial.com/televised. And now join us live at quarter to the hour from Duluth, Minnesota, the home of the annual Catalyst Festival and the Ongoing Story Institute, Executive Director Philip Gilpin. Philip, welcome in.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. And apologies for earlier. I realized I had the wrong time on my calendar. Oops.
That's okay. And what we're going to do is, by the way, to make sure that you get fully heard, we're going to continue your segment past the top of the next hour. So we'll make sure you get the full 20, 25 minutes in. You just had your latest Catalyst Festival. How did it go?
It was fantastic. It was so good to finally see everybody from our creative community around the world come together again. And it was good energy and good shows and good scripts and good pitches and just lots of good TV ideas out there. And, you know, I think it's always difficult for storytellers and artists to not have their stories heard. It's why we do it. So it was, you know, incredible to have live audiences again and get everybody mingling and talking about all the new shows.
When people got together, what were they talking about in terms of the kind of programming they wanted to do for television or the state of the art or the fact that there seem to be more opportunities out there because you have more mega content services out there and all the plus services are out, plus you have all these services that are growing up through smart TV sets and smart devices?
Yeah. You know, the conversation always seems to boil down to the heart of it all, which is, yes, there might be more distribution platforms, and yes, you can go ahead and self-distribute your own content that you're making. However, when it comes to the television industry, it's still all about relationship building, and it's all about having to take the time to develop a project. There's no fast track to that process, and so I think that's always the heart of any conversation, whether they're talking about finance or cinematography or production. Or whatever it is, the core element is always the fact that the notion of I'm going to make an independent TV show with me and my friends on a small budget and we're going to get it sold to Netflix or Amazon or HBO or NBC, that connection point still hasn't been made. And the reason for that is just we all know what you know how much money and time it takes to go and build something like a network TV series and have it run for so long, and there's no way around the relationship time forming. So I think that was the biggest heart of the conversation, and that's what Catalyst is meant to do, is help to be that solution to that problem.
Is there a sense among the audience out there that times in a way are in a number of ways are changing, in that you have more of these services out there, you have multi-channel bundles. They're taking these services as well. They're distributed on smart TV sets and smart devices. That there are more people of color who are forming production companies. There are more people of color, creators of color, who are getting promo development deals with the likes of a Netflix, a Warner Brothers, an HBO, a Peacock, NBC Universal, and so on. And that we're also seeing more and more gatekeepers of color at the major broadcast networks, the cable networks, the Netflixes, and so forth, the world, which would allow more projects by people of color to get made and get presented.
Yeah, there's no doubt that it's changing. Everybody's excited about that. Everybody's happy about that. But what it isn't changing is the fact that there's still a limitation on the number of major television series that get produced every year. So the types of people making them may be changing, but it's not like the number is doubling, tripling, or quadrupling every year where all of a sudden everybody who has a TV show idea suddenly gets a deal. You know, writers' rooms aren't expanding from 8 to 10 writers to 20 and 30 writers. So what's happening is you're getting more people coming into the pipeline, you're getting new voices, you're getting new content, but the pipeline is getting jammed with all of these new things, and audiences themselves are a little confused sometimes because they know that there's all these new channels out there, and they come to us and say, hey, where should we go and what should we watch? There's still, I guess what I'm saying is the more content creators that move into the system is good for everybody in the long run. But in the meantime, audiences are still starting to look around for, well, which brand name should I trust that's curating the type of material that I want to be watching? And you're getting all of these micro audiences where people are only watching the things that are interesting to them, which is what they should be doing. But the conversation is definitely about, well, how do you reach these micro audiences? How do you find them? If I have a story to tell, do I really have to go through the industry process? Do I really have to try to go through all the gatekeepers that are out there again? Or can I just fast track my way around? And what's happening is audiences, it turns out, aren't necessarily all relying on direct artist to consumer distribution like YouTube or Vimeo or these other direct sites. Audiences, by and large, still prefer to go through a brand name, and brand name means gatekeepers.
Mm-hmm. So how does your organization, because you not only do a TV festival, you're also doing an ongoing 12 months a year story institute, how do you address those situations and at the same time alert the independent creators out there that you may have now new ways to finance your project. So you have crowdfunding with sites like WeFunder and Seed & Spark and, of course, Kickstarter and Indiegogo. You now have blockchain, which is now being used. You have cryptocurrency. You may have NFTs. And we know that Fox is going to fund a series in part through blockchain, cryptocurrency, NFTs, that combination. How do you, with all those opportunities and options out there, how do you address the situation with the creators that come to you?
Yeah, that's the purpose for the Year Round Institute. It's why we're an institute first and a festival second, because the heart of the television industry is that it's extremely different from the film industry. And I make a point everywhere I speak to make sure that people know we have nothing to do with film except films. We don't work with films. We don't even work with filmmakers. And we only work with people that are making episodic. And the reason that distinction is so critical to answering your question is when people make a film, they're making a finished product. It might be 5 minutes, it might be 4 hours, but it's a finished product. And when it's done, it's done, it's in the can, and you go around and you bring it to festivals and you shop it, and somebody can sit there and watch the whole thing and decide whether or not they like it and whether or not they want to buy it. Kind of like going to a car dealership. You get to test drive the car, you get to pick out the color, and if you like it, you buy it. When you're making a series, you are not making a finished product. You are making a concept piece. Imagine going into a bank and saying, I want a loan to build a building. And they say to you, great, tell us about the building. How many stories high is it going to be? How many years is it going to take to build? How much money are you going to need? And imagine if your answer was, I don't know. That is an insane financial model. So whether you're talking blockchain or NFTs or old school cash or checks or, you know, any type of financing model that's out there, raising money to produce a series is inherently different from the film model. And that's why we have the Institute, is to help creators break out of this old school mold of trying to use something like a Seed & Spark or others that are focused on film models and start focusing on TV models. And to be honest, the TV industry itself is still even just catching up to the fact that creators are out there making independent series these days on their own. But for many, many years now, we've been around 16 years, there are still networks and studios out there who don't even know what to do with people that are making independent series. People will come to us with incredible shows that audiences love, and when we take them to a Hulu or a Netflix or an HBO or whatever, the exec goes, well, I can't just buy a series and put it on air. I'd have to redevelop it for, you know, 6 months or 2 years and put it in my writer's room first and all these things. And you're actually starting to see that breakdown first internationally. There are executives in the Mexican and Brazilian markets that are in fact buying independent series and putting them straight onto places like Netflix. That model hasn't cracked the U.S. market yet.
We're speaking with Philip Gilpin. He is the exec director of Catalyst, one of the longest running television festivals around. It takes place in Duluth, Minnesota. It used to be known as ITDF. It used to be in New England. Last a couple of years ago, it moved from the New England area to Duluth, Minnesota, part of the Midwest. And Philip is with us this time here on From RV Televised. I'm with you live from New York. Philip joined us quarter of the hour. We will keep him on till probably quarter after the hour or so. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name. Coming up Friday on From RV Televised, one of our guests will be Lauren Applebaum. Second time around on the program, no relation to yours truly, definitely in terms of spelling. She's one of the key people at Respectability, an organization that is trying to open up more opportunities in television for people with disabilities, both in front and behind the camera. There have been a lot of developments along that line lately. We'll talk to her all about it. That's Lauren Applebaum from Respectability, joining us Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here. March will be televised. In terms of what people are making as TV series pilots, whether it's scripted or unscripted, what caught your eye? What caught the people who showed up at the festival?
Yeah, well, personally, I tend to be more of a drama or sci-fi fan, but a lot of the comedies were really strong this year. One of the things that I always love about the festival is that it's where the general public audience, and it's you know, why we have this in Duluth, the general public audience gets to see all these shows before they get into the development pipelines and into the studio system, if you will. So they get to see the raw story, that the artist wants to tell and the way that the artist wants to tell it, which is fascinating. And there's always new shows that come out, and people will text me after when they leave a theater and go, oh my God, I just watched 4 hours of content that was better than anything I saw on air. Why isn't this on TV? So that's the exciting part. But I think overall this year, the drama categories were really strong. We posted all of the trailers to all of the award winners online today. We have trailers to all of the shows. There's 77 shows that screened at the festival this year. Those are all available online. And then our virtual pass, we actually still have all of the shows in their entirety available for everybody to watch for the next 2 to 3 weeks through the virtual pass online. So the festival might have ended here in Duluth yesterday, but it's still continuing around the world virtually.
Who are among the alumni who came out of Catalyst to make it in a major way in television?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, there are plenty going back over 16 years, but some of the more recent examples, you have a comedy writer named Elaine Lowe, who is currently writing on HBO Max's Gossip Girl. She's writing on Dynasty CW. One of the people who worked with me directly that brought a show to the festival a few years ago, Mary Lynn Suchan, is the showrunner assistant to Krista Vernoff over at Grey's Anatomy and Rebel. You've got our original founder, AJ Tesler, just directed a movie called Heroes Game that starred Sean Astin and Mayor Sorvino. Sonia O'Hara, whose show won the festival back in 2016, got signed by sold her first show at the next year's festival, and then got signed by William Morris Endeavor, and is now out directing and pitching shows around town. I mean, there's a lot of people that end up making relationships here, and it's not even about shows. A lot of times people will come to the festival without even having a show to screen, but they're here to network and they're here to meet everybody else, because going back to what I said earlier, the heart of the television industry is networking and relationship building. There's dozens and dozens, and it's exciting to see all the Catalyst alumni moving out there into the world and doing big things.
Did you get a lot of visitors from all sorts of programming services, whether it is the broadcast networks or the cable networks or the Netflix, Hulu, Amazons, what I call the first generation mega content service, and now all the plus services from Apple TV Plus to Peacock and so on, as well as the multi-channel bundles like Tubi and Zumo and so forth, that are now also starting to look at doing original shows, as well as ventures like Cinedigm and others, Duke and Media, which was just acquired by Trusted Media Brands, the Reader's Digest people, First Media, we've had in this program, that are now packaging original channels that are being presented on smart TV sets and devices, and they're on the lookout for originals there.
Yeah, it's a fascinating part of the conversation we have year-round, more behind the scenes. We've started reaching out and talking with folks at Roku and Tubi and Pluto, and some of the legacies as well, like NBC and others. We've had a long-standing relationship with HBO. I used to work there a decade ago. And we're basically having the conversation of trying to find, okay, who's going to be that first executive somewhere that sees the power in all of the stories that Catalyst has brought together and decides to put up something like a Catalyst channel where worldwide audiences can go and view all of these new shows and ideas for the first time. It's an interesting conversation that we have. A lot of the people that attend the festival from the industry side, we focus more on showrunners, producers, executive mm-hmm. producers, writers, the types of people who will actually sit in a room, watch something, and go, oh my goodness, that was an amazing writer. I'd love to meet them. I'm currently working on a Fox show. Let me have an interview with them so I can bring them in the room. Having big name, big title execs from the studios and networks is great for PR headlines, but their job isn't to go out there and pick talent and pick shows. It's the more the development execs, it's the showrunners that they hire, it's the writers and the producers who are actually working to create the thing. So we focus on bringing in the people who can actually take the talent out of the organization and give them work.
At the top of the hour, we're going to talk to Philip about a very interesting partner that has come aboard to work with Catalyst. And we'll also get his thoughts about the future of TV festivals, especially given the fact that the New York TV Festival here in the Big Apple has not been around for 3 years, and what is going on with that. And also the fact that you're seeing more film festivals also become TV festivals as well. And we will also talk more about Black Tag, They were our guests on our show last December. We have an up segment on them, so stay tuned. That's all coming up, too. And we'll get to all of that after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. You got to reach over 60 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, BTR brings you The Enchanted Self, a very unusual audio experience. Check it out tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, The Enchanted Self, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised. Welcome to those just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Abba, I'm with you live from New York. Happy to have you with us, 7 degrees at the top of the hour. And we are joined from Duluth, Minnesota, by Philip Gilpin, the executive director of one of the top TV festivals in the U.S. of A., Catalyst, which had their latest festival in Duluth over the last few days. If you have a question or comment for our guests, give us a call, 646-652-2906. It's 646-652-2906. Numbers good anyway, or catch us from the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner Radio. And we've got our chat room in business, too. So if you're shy about the phone, use the room. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Philip, one of your most unique partners is the National Academy of TV Arts and Sciences, which is the people that put together the Daytime Emmy Awards every year, the Sports Emmy Awards, and the News and Doc Emmys that just happened about a week and a half ago. We should point out that they are not the folks doing the primetime Emmys that were on last month on CBS. How did they get involved with Catalyst, and what kind of relationship do you have with them?
Yeah, we've been working with them since 2013, back in our Vermont days. And the purpose of that relationship and the announcement that we made this week was about our mentorship program. Believe it or not, the television industry at large up until now hasn't had a standardized mentorship program for creators to be able to come in and have the opportunity to work in a year-round institute environment like we do, and then at the end of it, get to meet and work with some industry professionals that can help advance their career. There are plenty of those types of programs in the film side of the world. Obviously, you've got plenty of great film schools and longstanding film festivals out there. And in fact, one of my mentors, a woman named Serena Catania, was one of the co-founders of what was the U.S. Utah Film Festival back in the 70s that eventually became Sundance. And this program was meant to very much focus on the mentorship and career advancement style of industry, industry process like they do on the film side. So it's incredibly exciting for everybody involved. It brings a lot of wonderful existing industry professionals to the table that can each take on a couple of mentees each year. And I think you're going to start seeing dozens and dozens of great success stories coming out of that as it grows over the years ahead.
Hmm. Has Natus thought about having similar relationship with other film festivals, whether it is Series Fest in Denver, which like your organization is now doing more things on a year-round basis, like the New York Television Festival, like what's going on in ATV in Atlanta, ATX in Austin, Texas, Southwest. Are they looking at similar relationships?
Not that I'm aware of.
Mm-hmm. Something else that's going on now is that we're seeing some very unique ventures popping up, particularly aimed at people of color or communities of color. There's Onyx Collective from Disney, headed by Tara Walden, the head of Freeform. There's Viacom CBS's effort with the NAACP. BET just launched BET Studios that Kenya Barris, the creator of Black-ish, is involved with, where creators have equity interest in the venture. They are out to cause programming not only for BET and BET Plus and other Viacom CBS-owned cable networks, but also third-party, as they like to call it, third-party players. Have you looked at having relationships with those organizations and bringing them into the Catalyst fold?
Absolutely. Yeah, our philosophy is go to where the creators are. So instead of sitting back and just putting up an open submission form on Film Freeway or something, and we love Film Freeway and they're great, but our philosophy is to go to where the creators are. So nationally within the U.S., this is why the Natus partnership is so important, because they have 19 regional chapters that filter straight down to the ground and communities all across the country. So that way creators can engage with us through their hometowns and through their regional support. Internationally, we collaborated last year with a group out of the U.S. State Department in D.C., and they helped us in turn reach out to a bunch of embassies around the world so that we could start forming relationships with film schools and other creative institutions in other countries to start bringing in new voices from outside the U.S. market. So just in the last year, we've launched programs in places like Algeria, Brazil, Nigeria, South Korea, Hungary and New Zealand and others. And in fact, one of our biggest partnerships this year was with the Korea Foundation. And they were here in Duluth the last week doing a showcase of Korean content. So as this grows, you're going to start seeing Catalyst do more and more, not just in the U.S., but also around the world in terms of going to where creatives are, letting them know that there's now a good pathway for them to get into the industry and then showcasing their content to the world each year. And that'll make it easier for the likes of all the organizations you just mentioned and the industry networks to be able to come to Catalyst and basically just go shopping every year for the types of content that they're looking for.
Vizio, the smart TV set maker, is now creating networks that they will run at the beginning on their SmartCast platform and then ultimately will go other places. We just had last week Polaris. It's a brand new venture by a former person with MTV and Revolt. He's out to cause original content, both scripted and unscripted. I mentioned Black Tag, which for those of you that missed the first half hour, we will repeat what we said then in our up segment and add on to it in a little bit. A very exciting venture that's out to be the Netflix and YouTube for African Americans. And we're seeing maybe other ventures aimed at Latinos, both English and Spanish, Native Americans, Asian Americans, South Asian, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Have you thought about bringing, because of people like Vizio and Roku and others, other smart TV set makers and device makers coming in as content creators, not just content distributors, about bringing them in, let's say, if not this time around, next time around?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the end goal, right? And I, you know, coming out of the pandemic, all of those conversations are finally happening again. When we start our annual process every fall to reach out to new partners and sponsors and others for the year ahead, it wasn't, you know, everybody had basically shut down a lot of those conversations in early 2020 for obvious reasons. So now that we're starting to come out the other side of this thing, you're starting to see those pick up again. I think that's exactly what we're going to be spending the next few months on. You know, one of the unique things about Catalyst is the festival's not the end of our year. And this is the most important point that I can't impress it enough, is that when you're working in the television side of things, a festival like ours is the beginning of the year ahead. It's not like a film festival where it's, oh, we made a film and we submitted it and we won an award. Isn't that great? Now we've got to go make our next project. And for an example of that, we have shows. I'm constantly being asked by managers and agents and development executives and producers, hey, look, I need a show about, I don't know, two cats and a dog in a Brooklyn apartment. And I will pull up shows about two cats and a dog in a Brooklyn apartment from our database, in our database from 2016, 2017. Because it's television, things and relationships and shows take years to develop. And so I think as we go forward here, that's going to be the dream scenario, is those types of partners coming in early so that they can start working with these, with the creators, and pick up these shows sooner in the process. And that way the festival every year is basically, it acts like a, like the Detroit Auto Show concept show, where you're coming to see not the kinds of cars that have already been made, but the kinds of cars that you're going to be making in the years and the futures ahead. That's the similar mindset and approach that we take with this. And yeah, I think we're going to be out there looking real hard to figure out who's going to be that primary partner. Maybe it's one of the ones you mentioned, but somebody out there, whether it's a legacy network, a streamer, or a tech company, or some type of company like you just mentioned, somebody's going to see the value in getting to aggregate all of this independent episodic content out there, and they'll be the first ones to break the mold. That trend.
How many series pilots do you have in your database?
Oh, geez, from over the years is over 1,000.
That's a lot of creativity.
We watch, you know, people constantly ask me what I watch on TV. My answer is all the things you haven't seen yet, because we spend our time and our year seeing all of the concepts that creators are making around the world that the industry, most by and large, hasn't seen yet. And when you go back a couple of years, the notion of an HBO or an ABC or somebody going to an independent television festival and buying something and putting it on air was absolutely ridiculous. The executives weren't there yet. Their mindsets were not there yet. I mean, I remember when I worked at HBO and this little website called YouTube.com launched, and there were meetings within the network talking about how the notion that the internet would never rival the brand power of something like an HBO. I mean, you know, the industry has changed so much. And I think the next and final change is as these legacy executives start to retire and start to move on, and the new group of people who grew up in the internet generation start to take over on the content development side, that's going to be the massive shift that you start to see, where it's now no longer looked down upon to work with creators that nobody's heard of before. Oh my God, they never won an Emmy, so they've never been nominated for something. Well, we can't work with them. Those barriers are fading by the day, and that's going to be good for everybody as we move forward.
Was there a lot of conversation about interactive television or development of it? Because you now have, with these smart TV sets and devices, the ability to control the programming, control what you see and how you use the set with your voice as well as with your remote control, because these sets and devices now have artificial intelligence like Siri, Google Assistant, Alexa, and so on and so forth. We've seen, for example, entrepreneurs launch virtual world services such as Portal TV, which does augmented reality as part of their apps. We had a company called GenVid, which just brought aboard Cindy Holland, one of the key executives at Netflix, as an advisor. They did a series last year called a virtual world on the television set called Rival Peak. It was on Facebook Watch and was on Facebook's Portal TV service, where people could control these avatar-type characters in like a Second Life, if you remember Linden Labs, kind of environment, and then like Survivor, take a character off every time. Was there a lot of conversation about doing interactive programming, whether it's choose your own adventure, avatars, augmented reality, that kind of, those arenas, if you will?
There is, yeah. And it's an interesting conversation about who should be doing it and when in their career they should be doing it. And what I mean by that is I had a number of creators I should back up a second. We get a lot of creators that come to us from all age groups and all kinds of backgrounds and all kinds of experience levels. We get incredibly talented college people where this is their first show, and they just, right out of the gate, they're doing professional level stuff. We get people who come to us who have won Emmys and are on regular primetime shows right now, but they had a show that they really wanted to create while they were on hiatus. So we get this wide range of people, and that's important to answer your question, because what's happening is people are starting to discuss more and more AR, VR, interactive, multimedia, and all of that, especially what's this overlap with gaming world look like, what about music and everything else. And I think you're seeing the trend in the direction of how do we include episodic programming in our Internet of Everything in our daily lives. And what I mean by that is, we obviously are all fully integrated into social media. We're starting to integrate a lot of the appliances and things around our house into our phones. How does content work in that realm? How does an AI program know what you're feeling or want to watch? Right, that's a scary/fascinating conversation. I, by training, am a physics and math degree. And so I come out of the science side and have always been following, obviously, the developments of AI over the years. And we're headed towards a future of you don't have to pick up a remote control anymore, because based on the things you've been saying online, or based on, and this is going to sound absurd, but I know that there are people out there thinking about it, based on the types of things you're ordering and from Amazon and eating in your out of your fridge, this AI algorithm is going to have an emotional profile of you, and therefore that's going to trigger certain types of content to come up on your devices. I mean, those conversations, as bizarre as they are happening, and it's completely new to everybody. And the interesting part about it is the people having those conversations and starting to make content in that direction are the ones who have a little bit more time and availability and career stability to do it. You don't find a lot of new risk takers out there that are going to go gamble on something that's not going to happen for another 15 or 20 years, because they're just busy getting their feet set and planted in their own career. So you still see a lot of more traditional episodic TV making, but those conversations are definitely starting. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And technology is definitely out there. And we'll
technology's
see
out there. Absolutely.
And it's growing, and it's getting better. And you get a sense that the audience may be ready for it. because particularly with the artificial intelligence voice services through the set as opposed to a speaker, the question is how fast are people going to seize on the opportunity? And we may know more when USA
exactly.
does the new show, America's Big Deal, which is sort of people pitching new products, new services, and you get the opportunity to immediately buy those products. And we'll see whether smart TV sets and devices are used along with smartphones in that. And we hope to have – we're trying to get the people at USA Network who are doing the show to let us know where they're at. Philip, before you go, where do you think the future of the TV festival is? It's very clear that despite the pandemic, with all the challenges that has had over the last 2 years, that most of the TV festivals, yours included, have come through it. And some, like yours and Series Fest out of Denver and so forth, are now year-round enterprises. At the same time, we're still wondering what the heck is going on with the New York Television Festival. Will it ever come back? Will somebody take it over? And also, we're seeing more film festivals do more with television. Tribeca here in New York, South by Southwest down in Texas, L.A. with their Dance With Me film, which is doing more and more TV pilot showing. Benville, Greeny Davis's venture, is doing TV pilots. And they have a deal with Sony's Gemstone Studios division to come up with one of those pilots and develop as a series. How do you see the TV festival circuit going from here?
I think there's going to end up being two sides to it. I think you're going to end up having a lot of the older legacy film organizations, like you mentioned, the Tribecas and the Sundances and other film festivals that are either run or associated with celebrity names, pick off a handful of things every year that are already professional level produced, probably produced by people who already work within the network system, probably produced and created by people that already have agents at major agencies. They're going to add, like Tribeca is going to do 8 to 10 pilots a year or something like that. And they're going to call it independent TV because it hasn't been put on the network yet, but it's not really indie TV, right? These probably have pretty high budgets. And like I said, they're probably being created by already established people. Maybe they pick one or two a year from brand new creators that nobody's ever really heard of before. So you're going to have that. And I think the film festivals have to do that to try to keep pace with the way that the industry is going. But remember, this organization started back in 2006, and its very first slogan was, "The revolution will be televised." And there's a point of pride about the fact that we're the organization that focuses on the artists first. Whether you're unknown or whether you're established, we focus on who you are and how and what your show is. And that's why we have the year-round process. That year-round process is not as simple as it sounds. And I think that's going to be where a lot of other television-focused organizations reach a difficult moment, because when you start getting thousands of projects submitted to you every year from multiple countries around the world, there's no way around the fact that you have to take hours and hours to work with each creator in order to get to the level of specificity and professionalism that the creators of Catalyst have and work with. So that's kind of the magic of the secret sauce that we've been able to figure out, is how do you take in all these new voices and help everybody figure out what is their next career step? Not just a handful of selected or 8 of 10 a year. But, you know, from a PR purpose, from a Hollywood Reporter headline, Variety Reporter headline, yeah, you're gonna see a couple of things picked up here or there. Some show that screens at a major legacy film festival that has a small television division will get bought and put on NBC or whatever. But in terms of what audiences are watching, I think where the content and the eyeballs are at. Just this year alone, the shows that were screened already have collective over 30 million views when you aggregate them together. And then when you look into the content database that we've been building over the last decade, that number gets into the hundreds of millions. So hundreds of millions of people out there have already watched the shows that Catalyst has been discovering. It's just that they didn't all know they were all part of the same community. So our job is to help all of these viewers and all these creators know that everybody else is in the sandbox with them. And that's what the Catalyst brand is trying to do through the year-round process.
If you want to know more about the Catalyst TV Festival and their year-round story institute, here's where you go online, www.catalyststories.org. That's catalyststories.org. The Catalyst TV Festival and Story Institute happening out of Duluth, Minnesota. Philip Gilpin, the Executive Director of Catalyst, thank you again for a great half hour plus of conversation. Congratulations on your latest festival. And by the way, if any shows develop out of that festival, please let us know. We'd like to have the creators on this program. That's a standing invite.
Will do. Thank you very much for all you're doing, and thank you very much for the time.
You're very welcome, Philip. You too. Take care. Enjoy the week.
Bye-bye.
Philip Gilpin, Executive Director of Catalyst, joining us live from Duluth, Minnesota. Now, let's do that up as an update. We're going to take it from the top to encourage everybody who just joined us at the top of the hour to listen in. Up as an update, by the way, is our regular feature that showcases guests and topics we had previously on this program, brings you up to date on what they're up to. Well, back in December, we showcased a very unique programming service called Black Tag that its management, two former executives of places like Google, who we interviewed on the program back last year around holiday time, had predicted that they would launch within the first three months of 2021 through smart TV sets and smart devices. In fact, they had raised $5 million from various investment organizations to make that happen. Well, Black Tag showcased itself this past Thursday here in New York at the Urban World Innovation Conference. It was put together by WarnerMedia's 150 Project, itself a very interesting story that we want to do a separate segment on down the road. And it was at WarnerMedia's great new headquarters at Hudson Yards in Midtown Manhattan, near the Jacob Javits Center. And the management, as I said, was there, and they had a lot of exclusive information to divulge, which we listened to, and you're about to hear it right now, and you will not hear it anywhere else. First of all, Black Tag is up and running as a smartphone app, and it's running both scripted and unscripted content. If you have an Apple iPhone or if you have a phone that has the Android operating system, you can get Black Tag right now, download as an app, and catch their programming. Their programming is a wide variety of content, both scripted and unscripted. They're in the scripted area, in the unscripted area, they're looking to do a lot of stuff in fashion, food, culture, education, entertainment. Ultimately, they want to do programming that is both premium content submitted by African-American creators and other creators of color like Common, Issa Rae, and so forth, the folks that would present programming on all sorts of channels from Netflix to HBO Max. And they want to also do YouTube, user-generated content by up-and-coming African-American and other people of color content creators. That's why they've called their venture the combo Netflix and YouTube of television. Now, in addition, they announced that they are going to, when we talked to them afterward, I asked, when are you going to be on smart TV sets and smart devices? The managers, and that is Akeem and Osama, said, we're going to have the first 3 months of 2022, we will have smart TV sets and smart TV devices affiliate with us by the end of March 2022. And the horizons in terms of programming for the venture is now a mix of live streaming events, scripted, unscripted programming. Some will be created specifically by Black Tag management and content creators. They can do, as I said, user-generated content. They will be doing interactive features, including commerce features. And some of the shows that they are either running now or will be running now through your smartphone include Superimpose, which is a music performance series. What's Your Sign? It's an astrology series. And ASS, standing for African Sex Stories, a brand new program based on the popular video podcast. And it should be pointed out that sometime next year, in addition to getting on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, they will also try to get programming on that will be financed by blockchain and cryptocurrency. And in fact, they want to get very big into NFTs, and they're going to launch an NFT platform the second quarter between April and June of 2022. And ultimately, they will also have sell digital items probably the second half of 2022. So they are very, very excited about what they're up to. They're very excited about the progress they've made so far. Once again, you can get Black Tag programming on your smartphone or whether it has an Apple iPhone with the iOS operating system or any smartphone that has Android TV or Android, I should say, as their operating system. If you want more details about Black Tag and what they're up to, both as a phone service and ultimately as a smart TV distributed service, go to BlackTag, BlackTag.com. It's BlackTag.com. It was a pleasure to meet the manager of Black Tag and some of their newest people in terms of marketing promotion in person. We're staying in touch with them. As soon as we find out when they're going to launch, and we will have not only the management back on the program, but we want to get some of the major, one of the major content creators that they're working with, like an Issa Rae, like Common, or others, that we'll be possibly working with them in the very, very near future. So stay tuned. We will have more details about that as we go along. I want to thank our guests for being with us today and all of you for tuning in. Thanks for hanging with us. We had to juggle things around a little bit in order to make it all work, and we certainly did. Coming up on Friday, among our guests, Lauren Applebaum from Respectability, the organization out to cause more opportunities for people with disabilities in front of and behind the camera. If you came in late on today's episode, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage anytime you like. It's blogtalkradio.com/televised. blogtalkradio.com/televised. And always, 24/7, check out our podcast. We put the podcast version on as soon as we go off the air. You get it a few minutes later on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal, and Reason. We also go on our special website, tomorrowbetelevisedpodsite.io. Newest episode on the top of the home screen. Click it, you get it. Other episodes at the bottom. Click it, you get it. You can also leave a comment as well. And we're also available on Spreaker Podcasts, TuneIn.com, as well as Apple TV and iTunes. We love hearing from you. What do you think about today's episode, and what's your thoughts on where TV is at and where it's going? Well, just email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, that's how you get involved in our classic trivia question of the week. One more time, let's give you the question. Name the TV lawyer drama from the 1960s starring Carl Betz. That's B-E-T-Z. He won an Emmy Award for it for the first of two seasons of that program, which was on ABC on Friday night. Stephen Young, by the way, was the co-star. So use that email, simonapple04@yahoo.com, to be involved in our classic trivia question of the week. Three prizes in play. You can also find me on Facebook and LinkedIn. Follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWT. However you respond, we respond back to you in 24 hours or less. Why? Because more than ever, what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toews, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, Jay Sonnenberg, is head of content. Website maintenance is provided by PodSite, the Internet's new podcast destination. For more, go to podsite.io. Our web coordinator is guitarist Beatrice. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you today by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, audio will transform the way you hear the world. For a free audio book or two and much more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Remember, if you subscribe to Audible.com after your one-month trial, you will save nearly half off on your audiobooks the first 4 months of your subscription. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. We'll be back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and our various podcast affiliates. And remember, between now and then, we hope you stay safe and stay great. If you haven't been vaccinated, check in with your doctor, go over your medical history and your records, and then make a great choice. Remember, we are licking this pandemic now more than ever. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.